America's Cannabis Conversation.
Hi, everyone. This is Ed Rosenthal, author of the new book, Cannabis Growers Handbook, which is available everywhere. And I want to congratulate the people at W420 Radio Network, all the guys there who are doing such a great job for the past 2 years, putting on great shows with great interviews, lots of information, and an upbeat attitude. Keep doing your great work, folks. Keep doing it.
Time now for the lowdown on another high time experience. Here's 420 lifestyle correspondent Rich Walkoff.
Well, if you enjoy cannabis in the 19 states it's legal, in the 36 states it's medically allowed, you owe a debt of gratitude to our guest today on America's Cannabis Conversation, Ed Rosenthal, longtime social activist, marijuana advocate, teacher, author, and the guy who wrote the Marijuana Growers Handbook and now the revised edition, the Cannabis Growers Handbook. Wouldn't you know it? Today's the day it hit the presses. Congratulations, Ed.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
That's awesome. Now, you got to tell us about this book because I'm gonna go way back into the day. I've got the Marijuana Growers Handbook. I think you wrote this umpteen years ago.
And 12 years ago. That's 12 years old.
Awesome. Well, you are the old and New Testament kind of guy. This is new and improved. From the Marijuana Growers Handbook to the Cannabis Growers Handbook.
So tell me. This is the sixth book in the series of grow books.
And I guess you've learned as you go and you grow.
Yes, and technology has changed a lot. People grow differently than they did 30 years ago. There's a lot of new tools out and new ideas about measuring light and nutrients and such. And so I cover all of that material. Plus, I wrote this with two other authors, Angela Baca, who's been a cannabis writer for a long time, and she also helped with the last book. And also Rob Flannery, and he has a doctorate in plant science and it has Dr. Rob Farms, in which he grows cannabis.
Well, that's awesome. What do you think are the major evolutionary changes in the growing of cannabis in the last quarter century or so?
Main thing is the lighting, because lighting has gotten a lot more efficient. People started with fluorescents and went to metal halides and HPS lamps, and now everybody's going into LEDs as far as indoor and supplemental light.
Is that because
main difference? I think
is that. Delivering a broader spectrum of light or the more appropriate light?
Usually a more appropriate spectrum, and also delivers it more efficiently so that you save electricity.
Well, that's a win-win. Are you partial to the indoor, which is more of a controlled, ecosystem, or I'm personally partial to the sun-grown because I think that's just how nature wants and makes it best.
Well, I only smoke indoor, greenhouse, and outdoor cannabis.
Well, so you do both, but how would you all differentiate?
Right.
In other words, all and any.
But it really depends because, actually, I think it's in some ways hardest to get really great cannabis outdoors to. It really depends on the environment that the plant is growing in. But for much of the United States, outdoor using the seasons can be problematic because Sure. The plants don't come in time or, there's a lot of mold in the fall. So, yeah. But I think that great, no matter whether... what system you're using, you can grow great cannabis. And you just have to do it in a wise manner.
Now, you're living proof right behind you. That's your garden, right?
It was. Actually, this was Ken Hayes' garden. He was an early grower and dispensary owner. And I went up and we visited him and took that photo.
Okay.
It's an old photo. Yeah.
I could almost smell it here. It looks so, it's the real deal. Now, we met briefly. You may not remember, but it was at the International Cannabis Business Conference in San Francisco right before the pandemic. And you shared with me a fascinating story. You've been known as the godfather of ganja. I want to know who tagged you with that. And you told me you were stopped on the streets, if I remember, Amsterdam by somebody who just recognized you. And it's like, you're blowing up world famous, man.
Well, at one time I was pretty well known in Holland because of a big court case. And the government, you know, the hemp museum on the center of the city. Well, the government wanted to close it down, and they said it was propagandizing cannabis. And there was this big trial. Well, here's how it started. These people wanted to open up a museum, and they hired me as curator, and I started putting the museum together. And some newspaper reporter went to the Justice Department the Dutch Justice Department and asked the leader of it, the head of the Justice Department, what do you think about this new museum? And he said it would be a travesty if they let this museum open. And then the reporters from Volkskrant came back to me and said, well, what do you think? And I said, well, you know, if they closed down a museum, it wouldn't be the first time that a museum was closed down in Holland. And the reporter said, well, when was a museum closed down in Holland? I said, oh, during the Nazi occupation.
Right.
And so they went back to the Minister of Justice, and he said, well, I'm not a Nazi. And I said, well, like, if they start denying it before they're even accused, we should look into it. So that set the stage for me for the institution that is the museum and me going on trial.
Yeah, and did you beat the trial?
Well, in typical Dutch manner, I was found not guilty of all the major charges, but they charged me with possession of less than an ounce of cannabis, probably the only person in Holland charged with less than an ounce of cannabis that year. And so that way they didn't have to pay court costs.
Well, I'm glad they don't want to ban books or burn books. Let's just burn the flower. Now, you have dedicated your book to Pete Seeger, who,
yes,
of course, a legendary musician and social activist like yourself preceded you. And his legendary song with the Kingston Trio, Where Have All the Flowers Gone? Well, now we know where all the flowers have gone. And Tommy Chong writing the foreword, a buddy of yours. You got to give us a good Tommy Chong story.
Well, this isn't so much about Tommy, but Tommy was involved. You know, I was on trial about 20 years ago for, I was running a nursery, producing clones so that patients could grow their own. And the feds busted it. And, the head of the DEA came out here to announce it. And he went to the Commonwealth Club, which is an intellectual discussion group. And he was roundly booed. And the sheriff of San Francisco came out with a bullhorn excoriating him. That was Hallinan. And it became a big trial. And Tommy came up to stay, to attend a party. You know, we said, Tommy's going to be at the party, and we were charging for the party. So it was, there was so much smoke at the, like, I live at the border of Piedmont and Oakland, and I live in Piedmont, and there are these apartment houses across from where I live. And the police came, the Piedmont police, and they said, your Oakland neighbors are complaining that there's too much smoke, so could you please smoke inside? And what year is it? Because of Tommy, you know, you got all those people there.
That's something. What year is that now?
That must have been 2003, 2004.
So it's not ancient history. It's in this millennium. It's hard to even fathom that you're fighting the good fight for over 50 years. I mean, you were a yippie. The Youth International Party, you showed up at a trial in the as the Wizard of Weed. You got to share that story.
Well, I have all these costumes, and I showed up at trial one day wearing that. The Wizard of Weed costume.
What was that all about?
Well, you know, part of, I just thought that it would put some interest in the trial and keep it going and put some humor in it. You know, the judge was an apparatchik of the state, you know, just like any statist judge, whether it was under Stalin or Putin or Hitler or whatever the state wanted is in terms of cannabis, he was willing to give the prosecution. And he was very unfair. He interrupted our cross-examination of a cop and took over it when he realized that it was going to come out that either the cop was a liar or a dunce, one of the two. And so he took over it. He directed the jury to convict me. And he didn't allow the jurors to know that it was medical marijuana. The whole thing was a farce. And ultimately, it didn't work out well for them. I was found guilty by the jury. And then the jury found out what the trial was really about. And they came back as civilians at the next court appearance, and they were all excoriating the judge and saying what a rotten person he was. That was the jurors, and that was the first time in American history that a jury denounced its verdict.
Wow.
Hey, wait a second. Everybody has to take a toke for that. Wait one second.
I love it.
Judge Breyer, who won finally?
You tell him, Ed. You tell him. This is like Chicago 8 and Julius Hoffa, you know.
It was very much like that. And, you know, I had some experience as a yippie. And so, you know, also Steve D'Angelo, he was a fellow yippie. He was a slightly younger generation, but yeah, he was very, both of us were very influenced by the party. And but one of the sayings was, when freedom is outlawed, only outlaws will be free.
Oh, I love that. That's very,
you know, I mean, the right wing might use it, but we weren't talking about militarism. We were talking about freedom. So it was different emphasis. So anyway, yes, it was. And that I planned it very much like that, that it would be like that, that there would always be interest. The courtroom was always overflowing, you know, and the jury didn't catch on what it was all about until after the trial. But, you know, the trial, like I was found guilty, I think on a Thursday or a Friday, and the next court day was Tuesday. So all these jurors came back for the trial. And they were going to decide whether I was going to be put into prison immediately or whether they were going to wait till after sentencing. So the judge wisely decided to wait till after sentencing. And the jury and I all met in the, reconvened in, I think it was a Chevy's or a Chili's restaurant that was down the block. And, you know, they were all feeling guilty. And I had to comfort them because I didn't feel guilty. I wasn't guilty.
Sure.
But they felt really bad and guilty. So I really had to comfort them. There was something else.
I know you've been a teacher. Have you been a teacher mostly in the cannabis realm? Because it sounds like you pioneering your message maybe a half a century ago, it just laid the foundation and the groundwork for so many the emancipation of the cannabis industry in the world and the consumption and the growing and the like.
Yeah, well, to me, cannabis is one step in changing people's behavior to a gentler behavior, you know, to a gentler behavior, non-military behavior, and so on. Now, I have two stories about that. And one, I'm trying to trace it down a little bit more, but there was this group of chimpanzees in which all the males had died. So all the young chimps only had the experience of the females, and they stopped harassing the females, and they stopped being so violent. They became a much gentler society. And that shows something about nature and nurture. I mean, by nature, we can be violent or not violent, and it really depends on nurture. And I think that cannabis is one of those things that helps people, you know, think outside the box. In other words, all our lives, we've been taught to look at things from a certain perspective. And so whatever we see it through those filters. So if we change, and the brain, it's sort of like a box, and it won't let stray thoughts into it. And cannabis, Aldous Huxley said that psychedelics, and I include cannabis in this, that they make the brain a less efficient filter, so more thoughts can come through that you might not have if you hadn't used the substance. And I think that's really true. And I'd like to see I'd like to see what happens in Oklahoma over the years as more and more people flock to cannabis in Oklahoma, and to see whether that really very conservative militaristic state changes.
Yeah, well, I think there's no question. It's not only thinking outside the box, think like there is no box, right? I mean, the neural...
Well, everybody has a box. Everybody has, you know, from the time that you were probably prenatal, you were being taught certain things are good, certain things are bad, certain values or whatever prejudices or likes or dislikes your parents had. And so, you know, we're all taught, we all have to have some frame of reference, and that's our frame of reference. But it doesn't mean it can't be changed or we can't think outside that frame.
Sure. So now we have this paradox that California legalizing marijuana has, and we mentioned 18 other states, including Washington, D.C. So almost a half of the country, you know, in terms of population, has access to recreational or medicinal marijuana. But sadly, the taxation and the corporate influence has really made it challenging for small growers or even independent long-term growers to make their living. You have some thoughts on how the laws have changed the landscape or make it more of a corporate-friendly environment?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily blame it on just the corporations. It's like this. As long as there were sanctions for growing and people could go to jail or have other risks, as long as that existed, a limited number of people went into cannabis. And also, the size of their gardens, for the most part, was limited. And now with legalization, two things have happened. More people have gotten into it, including corporations. And so the price has gone really way down, especially on the wholesale levels. And I'm all in favor of it. Who do you favor, the farmer or the consumer? So if the prices are low, it means people can use more pot, right? Isn't that good for society?
Yeah, sure, if the access is there, but sometimes... Yeah.
But here's the other thing. I agree with you that there's a change in where the money is going. So instead of staying within the community, it's going to these big corporations. But there's a way out of that. There are two ways out of that. And that is, in California, most pot that's sold and is still sold in the traditional market rather than being sold in stores, because it's so much cheaper in the, you know, in the informal market. That's one thing. And the second thing is, it's a lot like tomatoes in a way. You know, in the United States, there are these internet, we can buy tomatoes produced by international food corporations. We can buy them by these national corporations. We can buy tomato paste and tomato sauce made by these giant corporations. Then you can buy tomatoes from regional farmers, and it gets down to somebody who puts out a few baskets of tomatoes and says, leave money in the jar. Well, I guess they don't do that anymore, but they used to do it in rural areas. But I guess with the opiates, that changed. But anyway, on all, there are people earning money from growing tomatoes on all levels. But you know who grows the majority of tomatoes in the United States?
Who's that?
Home growers.
Okay.
And so even if the corporations have the industry, there's no reason why people can't grow their own.
You know, thankfully, many of the convictions on cannabis charges have been expunged. People have gotten some justice delayed. At least it's happening. Where do you see the future with the push toward federal legalization, which could be a game changer in so many ways for growers and consumers and banking and the like, and taxation? I don't see a downside to it, but I'm curious to your perspective, Ed.
Well, it all, you know, the devil is in the details. So it all depends whether it's like something like Nevada, where it favors, you know, people who are already rich. In order, you know, there were incredible costs just to apply for a license, and you had to go big. So it depends whether it's like that or whether it's more like, funny that I should mention it, Oklahoma, where $2,500 in a lease and you're in business, you know. So it really depends whether smaller people are precluded from doing it.
Yeah.
But in any case, the one thing that's most important is that people be allowed to grow their own.
Absolutely.
With all the commercialism, and I'm not saying everybody has the space or the ability or, you know, the time, but if people can grow their own, that ameliorates a lot of the harm done by bad corporate regulations.
Sure. Hey, what's your favorite strain? What's your go-to on a fun?
Well, it's a strain that I had many years ago, and I just got it back about 6 months ago, and it's called J27. And right now, but it will have another name when it comes out. And it's when I had my nursery, I used to grow it. And it's only a couple of people had it when I just got it back 6 months ago. But people when given a choice prefer to smoke this a lot. So that's one of them. And then I have some G4. I have some Firewater OG. And
hey, tell me a little bit about.
Oh, and also some Superbud.
Okay, what's the the J27? Is it a hybrid?
Yes, it's a hybrid, and we you know, when they've done genetic tests, it doesn't come close to anything, and it has different terpenes in it. We're trying to do more research on it. I was given, the way I got it is when I started my nursery, I was given a bag of about 100 seeds by this fellow who said these were his bag seeds that he's collected from the best plants over the years. And from that, I got J1, J2, and J27.
Awesome. Well, it's a long way from the DEA raid at your home almost 20 years ago. And look at you now, back with a new book. Show us your new book that's coming out today. It's out today.
Well, these are the advanced copies, but it's printed and it's on a truck. And anybody who ordered it at edrosenthal.com, it's going to be shipped sometime this week. So,
and, congratulations.
Yeah. And also, as I said, with every book that I'm shipping, I'm putting in a bud photo that I took and signed, and people will be able to frame it or throw it away or whatever.
You can buy your book interstate. You just can't transport the beautiful green across state lines. Isn't that weird? What kind of world is this?
You know what? Look what's happened to California. You know, 80% of Humboldt and Mendocino's crop went east, right? And now New York State and these other states are going legal. And so they're not going to require as much weed from California. So they're going to, I mean, that's going to really affect California prices a lot if these people can't export it.
Supply is up, right? Well, awesome to catch up with you, Ed. Congratulations on an amazing career as an advocate for the legalization and the acceptance of a beautiful plant, and your Cannabis Growers Handbook out right now. This is the America's Cannabis Conversation with Ed Rosenthal. I'm Rich Walkoff on the W420 Radio Network. If you want to hear this again, go to W420RadioNetwork.com, archive, and we'll be right back.
Are you interested in learning more about cannabis? Have you thought about starting your own cannabis business but don't know how? If so, we invite you to join the Cannabis Conversation with other people like you who are looking at the exciting opportunities in this exploding business. Listen to America's Cannabis Conversation. You'll hear from industry experts and get insights into the cannabis industry. For archived shows and for more information, log on to americascannabisconversation.com.
Yo, 420 Radio Network. Right on. Congratulations. 2 years, not 1 year, 2 years running now. That's pretty good. For you guys to give a guy like me a platform to scream as loud as I can, tell my story, tell the story of legacy farmers and our people, and also be a steward of the planet with responsible farming practices and integrity brands, changing the world one plant at a time, is a lot easier. Platforms are where it's at. Thank you guys for everything you do. You know, Soil King can't be Soil King unless I can get the message out. The steward of the planets can't be the steward of the planets unless they get the message out. So, you know, gratitude, respect for everything you guys do. And Soil King will see you on the next show.
Welcome back to The Conversation. This is Chase Roberts, Women in Cannabis correspondent for the W420 Network. It is a pleasure to introduce Carson Humiston, founder and CEO of Vangst, and she was also named one of Forbes 30 Under 30. Carson, welcome. Thanks for being here. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good. Every time I get reminded of the 30 Under 30 thing, I'm reminded that I'm almost 30. I'm turning 29 this month.
Oh, shoot.
I got the award when I was 25, so I'm like, all right.
Well, maybe you could win some new accolades, you know, post 30. I'm sure you will.
40s. I think the bar gets higher for people in their 40s. So I'm looking forward to being to my 30s. But yeah, thank you for the intro.
Yeah, of course. Of course. And, you know, I really did want to start at the beginning. As a little girl, did you ever envision this would be your future?
100%. Always wanted to be an entrepreneur from the time I was a little kid. I grew up on a small golf course in a small town in upstate New York. And at night I would go around and I would collect golf balls, and then I would clean the golf balls, and then convince the person that ran the golf course to let me have a used golf ball stand.
So this was par for the course.
Yes.
Used exactly. The pun.
Yeah. You know, that was one of many of the small businesses I tried as a kid.
Yeah. You went to St. Lawrence University, and this is kind of where the seedling of this idea came in. For our listeners, can you tell them what Vangst is?
Vangst is the cannabis industry's recruiting marketplace. And so we're a platform where folks that are looking to get into the industry can come in, they can learn about jobs and opportunities in cannabis and match and connect with jobs in the cannabis industry. Everything from entry level temporary jobs to full-time jobs to C-suite jobs. Vangst is the one-stop shop for all things cannabis jobs.
And what was the impetus for you to start this?
Well, you know, it didn't always start out this way. Like you mentioned, I went to St. Lawrence in upstate New York. I had been doing another company called On Track Adventures, was a student-owned, student-run travel company. And through doing this business, I had developed a database of students and recent college grads, the people that had gone on the trips or who had wanted to go on the trips. And I emailed everybody asking, you know, we're all getting ready to graduate or have just graduated. What industries are you interested in getting jobs in? And a large percentage wrote back saying the cannabis industry. You know, which at the time, it's hard for people that are in the industry now, especially newcomers, to even remember this time. But
yeah,
cannabis was only legal for adult use in Colorado, Washington, Oregon, and Alaska.
That wasn't that long ago. That was only maybe 3 years ago.
So when, you know, when we saw more states really legalized was, yeah, was the election of 2016, right? So this was, you know, early 2016. And yeah, it just wasn't a big sexy industry like it is today. And so to want to work in cannabis, I always look back on it. And I think it was very forward thinking of, I guess, the older generation of millennials. You know, we were kind
absolutely
of the last group before Gen Zs, but, you know, very forward thinking to see this as the next great industry. And I started researching the space. I went to a trade show in the space. I really tried to understand the industry and all the different businesses from cultivation to extraction and manufacturing to retail to, of
so course, many facets. Yeah.
Yeah. The ancillary picks and shovels businesses and the positions that were available in the space, and realized there was a huge opportunity to connect folks that were looking for jobs with the jobs in what we all thought would be the next fastest growing industry in America, which it's proven to be.
Do you feel that that percentage of interest in that in the cannabis industry has grown since that time, you know, that it started and you created this recruiting platform? Do you feel like more people want to get into the industry, or is it plateaued? Where are we at?
Absolutely. Especially as the stigma continues to break. There's thousands of people that come to Vangst saying, I'm dying to break into the cannabis industry. And so particularly in new markets, you look at a really, really excited to get into the space. And I think that COVID was a defining moment for the industry. Cannabis went from being somewhat seen as illegitimate and illegal to an essential service.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
More cannabis being sold than toilet paper in the early days of the pandemic. So, you know, it's here to stay. I think that the stigma is breaking down and more people want to be involved, and they want to be involved for a host of reasons, whether they want to be involved because they believe in the medical benefits, they have a personal or family experience with benefiting from medical cannabis, or they're capitalists and they see a dynamic, you know, a gigantic economic opportunity. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to want to be in this space today.
I was curious to find out from your perspective, now that you've been running this company since 2016, what do you feel that what skill set are employers in this industry most looking for right now? And what are the jobs that people trying to get into cannabis are most looking for right now?
Yeah, so of course, it's such, I always get asked this question. It's a, you know, very popular question, and there's so many different kinds of jobs. You know, I always say people can keep their career, change their industry. And so, you know, as an example, you, a reporter and a journalist, right? You, you had a very successful career prior to moving into the cannabis space. Now you're taking those skills to do work in the cannabis space. So whether you're in a job, whether you're in finance, you're in HR, you're in marketing, I mean, there's a lot of ways and skill sets that this industry needs. And then there's more of like the industry specific skill sets, everything from on the retail side, bud tenders, or some states are called as patient consultants, that know the products, know how to sell the products, know how to work the point of sale systems, cultivation, where you're growing the cannabis, you know, extraction, where you're a lab technician or a formulation specialist. I mean, there's just so many different kinds of jobs. It's hard for me to say, this is the best job in cannabis, because there's so many.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then also you offer free sign up. Can you tell our listeners if they sign up with your company, what does that entail? What do they get? Because unless they've actually signed up, maybe you can just go into detail how would that benefit them?
So when you sign up as a candidate for Vanks.com, when you join, you get a bunch of things and it's all 100% for free. So number one, you get access to the hottest cannabis businesses that are hiring. So you can search the companies, you can look at their company profiles, you can see what benefits they offer, everything from do they offer a 401k, do they offer health benefits? You can find out all the things that an employee would want to know about an employer in the cannabis industry from that company's profile. So if you're just interested in who are the hot companies in cannabis and what, as an employee, would I, you know, what's it like to work there? You can find that out on Vanks.com. Then of course you can see the best jobs that are available because the best jobs are showcased. We also have a community where you can go in and you can make a post. I've been in retail for 15 years and I want to get a job in cannabis. What do others recommend? And actual people that work in cannabis retail will respond to you right on the platform. And we're launching a learn section where you can take cannabis 101, retail 101, extraction 101. So you can actually really begin learning.
That's amazing.
What skills are needed.
When are you projecting that's going to launch?
October 2021. So this month.
Very soon. Very, very soon. We're here.
Yeah. For MJ BizCon, we'll be live with our first course. It's a retail course. And we're going to grow it from there. We expect to have at least 20 courses by the end of this year.
That's truly amazing. I really do think that's a resource most people need.
I think so.
Because the want's definitely there. Everybody wants in, but no one really, and you're aiding in that, really kind of knows how to get there. Unless you've already been in the industry or know someone who's already been in the industry. So that's, yeah.
Absolutely.
And according to research, and you know this, there's so many different quotes about what it's projected to be, but it is, according to Grandview Research, it's expected to, the global legal marijuana market is expected to reach $146 billion by the end of 2025. How is your business going to be able to grow with these needs?
Sure.
You have systems in place already?
So yeah, I mean, the way that we think about it is job creation. So today there's 310,000 employees in the space. This number is expected to double over the next couple of years. And so we've taken a technology first approach because it would be very hard to hire enough recruiters to service all of these people. And so through our platform, we hope that we'll be able to help people break into the industry, find the skills they need to be successful in the industry, and then get matched with the leading companies in the industry. So I feel that we have the infrastructure in place to be able to grow with the industry because of the foundation that we've laid down from a tech perspective.
Amazing. Yeah, I think, in the beginning, people weren't really marrying tech with cannabis. That wasn't the norm, quite frankly. And now it's segueing a little more into that. You are the largest and most qualified network of cannabis professionals. Do you feel like your competition has grown? Did people see what you did and say, hey, you know what, let's get on that train? Are you worried about any of that? Or are you, like you said, you built a really solid, good foundation.
Yeah.
Are you feeling about that?
I would say that there's a lot of jobs to fill in cannabis and there's a lot of people taking different approaches. There's absolutely no barriers to entry for someone to become a cannabis recruiter. Anyone off the streets could say, I'm a one-man band and yeah, I'm doing cannabis recruiting. They could find someone, they could place them into a job and they could get a small percentage of the salary. So I think there'll be a lot of one-man bands, manual recruiting agencies that pop up because the barriers to entry are so low. To build a robust, thriving marketplace where you have talent and candidates connecting on demand, I think it's harder to build that in a day. At this moment, no. But of course, we're always looking at what else is cooking out there. And I think it's one thing to be first to market, but it's more important to be last to market. And so how do we make sure that we're the last one standing in the cannabis space, right? There's going to be a lot of companies that come that emerge in the cannabis industry. And, from, I think, Vangst, it's ours to lose if we're not one of the last ones standing, but it's too new to know who the people in 50 years are that are the last ones standing in the cannabis space. But we have every intention to be one of them. And I think if we continue servicing the customers and candidates, we will be.
Fantastic. And you, your company consciously tries to build diverse and equitable teams. Can you explain a little bit about maybe how you're approaching that? Because the numbers in the industry are askew. You know, traditionally it's been white, older men dominating the CEO positions, at least. Sure. I don't have exact quotes or facts right now, but they're out there. You can look them up very easily. How do you feel it's diversifying, or how are you helping perpetuate that through your company?
Sure. So look, I think that one is educating our clients. It's proven out that diverse teams, people that come from different backgrounds, are the most successful. Having all different types of opinions in the room is what makes a business successful. And so encouraging our clients to make it a priority, right? At the end of the day, companies are coming to us to find talent, and we can present them with all the talent available, but it's up to them to make the decision. So number one is really making sure that our clients are prioritizing building diverse teams and inclusive teams. So I'd say that's number one. And then number two, Vangst is doing a lot of work to do our part to make right by how folks have been negatively impacted by the war on drugs. And so we've partnered with the Last Prisoner Project and several other re-entry groups to support folks who are coming out of prison for cannabis use, to help them get ready to re-enter society and find a job, whether that's finding a job in cannabis or finding a job somewhere else. That's really from our company's perspective where we feel we can make a big difference here. And I think every company has to figure out their own unique way to make a difference. But if every company does something small to make a difference, to correct some of what's been done by the war on drugs, we'll get to a really incredible place as an industry as a whole.
That is so important. I mean, so, and cannot be overlooked.
I think so. Yeah.
The clearing of records, everything that needs to happen. Absolutely. And then moving forward, going into 2022 soon, which is so crazy, what do you have projected for you guys? Do you have any, you mentioned things you're going to build out starting in October, but what's coming in 2022?
Yeah, we're going to launch our business into new markets. And so getting into places like New York, New Jersey, Florida, some of the new emerging states that we see as super promising, where there's a lot of growth created. And so everything from finding candidates, helping them get the skills that they need, and then finding companies and matching the two. Really, our focus is on growth. At this point, we have clear product market fit. We have a really solid foundation, and now it's time to pour fuel on the fire and grow. And so we're going to double the size of our internal team. We'll triple the size of our customer count. We'll 10x the size of our candidate count, and really, really grow and build this thing out to be, like I mentioned, the category killer for jobs in cannabis. So it's exciting couple years ahead, but certainly a ton of work to do, and execution is everything at this point.
And lastly, do you have any advice for anyone, just common best sage advice for, you know, anyone looking to get into the industry?
Get started and start having conversations. You know, I would say that my advice to the thing that I'm really focused on is that, like, when people are talking, it's all ideas. So if you're saying, oh, I want to get into the industry, you're just talking. So get out there, get on Vangst, go to a trade show, listen to your podcast, do a lot of actions to figure out where you fit in, to write to meet the right people. Same with if you want to start a business, like, stop talking about it and start doing something. I think if people took a bias to action, you know, there's so many people that I talked to 3 years ago that are like, I want to get into the industry. It's like, if you really set your mind to it and get after it, you'll get into the industry. So I would say, like, if you want to get in, set your intentions and make it happen. And there's plenty of resources like Vangst out there.
Yeah. Carson, thank you so much for being here and your insight. It's so appreciated. If you missed any of this great interview with Carson Hemiston, you can go to W420 Radio Network and click on the archive section to listen to this and other great interviews. And we'll be right back.
420 Radio Network. Right on. Congratulations. 2 years, not 1 year, 2 years running now. That's pretty good. For you guys to give a guy like me a platform to scream as loud as I can, tell my story, tell the story of legacy farmers and our people, and also be a steward of the planet with responsible farming practices and integrity brands, changing the world one planet at a time, is a lot easier. Platforms are where it's at. Thank you guys for everything you do. You know, Soil King can't be Soil King unless I can get the message out. The steward of the planets can't be the steward of the planets unless they get the message out. So, you know, gratitude, respect for everything you guys do. And Soil King, I'll see you on the next show.
America's newest and fastest growing cannabis-focused radio network is expanding across the country and looking to add to our sales and marketing team. America's Cannabis Conversation offers listeners insight and information on the exploding world of cannabis. It also gives advertisers the opportunity to reach a hyper-targeted audience, literally neighborhood by neighborhood, in markets all across the country. We're looking for a few motivated individuals that want to essentially run their own local business. To learn more about this exciting opportunity or to apply, visit americascannabisconversation.com. It's time for Women in Cannabis on America's Cannabis Conversation, part of the W420 Radio Network.
Didn't you get the memo?
Here's Chase Roberts.
Welcome back to the conversation, and welcome back to two guests that have been on before. We're talking to Mike Regan and Colin Ferrier. So, gentlemen, welcome back to the conversation.
Thanks, Dan. It's good to talk to you.
Thanks for having us, Dan.
Thank you for joining us. So, in our last conversation, we were talking about the fact that the legalization of cannabis, and there are, even under the current situation, there are some serious barriers to entry. One of them being the cost of capital. Local banks are prohibited under current law from loaning money to illegal businesses, so the vast majority of them don't. If you get money, I think Colin said in our last show, you may be paying in the teens to get money when the Treasury's borrowing money at 8 basis points, so there's a huge risk premium. So the risk premium might have been the cost of the possibility that you could be shut down by the federal government. But I'm wondering if inherent in that is the risk of the cannabis business. And does the need for capital for people to want to get into a growing business, and it could, a business that could rapidly expand, are they still going to wind up paying a pretty price because the bankers – well, they won't be prohibited under federal law. The bankers are still looking at the relative amount of risk and failure in this business. Are they going to is it going to cost more? Is this really a high yield play?
You are right that it's not the lowest risk business in the world. It's certainly not treasuries. But at this point, you know, the very high rates, and remember, those very high rates are for the companies that can even get capital. There's plenty of companies that haven't been able to borrow at any rate effectively. I think once you remove the federal illegality and make this a normal business, then it just becomes a rapidly growing consumer product with an agricultural and industrial supply chain similar to sort of any other agricultural, industrial, retail, consumer business, but one that's also growing quite rapidly. And in terms of the product, has a proven product. I sometimes compare it to the internet in the late 90s. But you know, in the late 90s, there was a big question whether people would actually, you know, buy things on their phones, right? And that only proved that people would. But at this point, you know, with cannabis, you have a very large proven market in the illicit market, right? This is a product that lots of people are using to the tune of about $50 billion a year in the U.S. It's just not legal. So, you know, if you make it federally legal and make it so that, you know, banks aren't jeopardizing their charter for money laundering and drug trafficking by lending to a state legal business, once it's legal at the federal level, I think you'll see a lot of a lot of capital open up at rates lower than is currently being lent to the industry. Does that mean that you're going to be able to borrow for 3%? Like, I remember Albertsons, the grocery store, a couple months ago issued $1.5 billion of debt at 3%. Is it going to be that low? Mm-hmm. Probably not, but I don't think Albertsons is growing, you know, double digits for the next decade either. So I think you termed it more high yield. It's probably more in that high yield area, but you know, certainly okay. Better than what the current access is and the rates are now.
So Colin, let me propose an idea here that a lot of the food and grocery and cosmetics and all of these companies have pretty much shied away from this marketplace because of its illegal nature. Do you think that if we get legislation that makes it legal to grow it and sell it across interstate lines, do you think that different players are going to come into the marketplace, and how will it change that market?
That's a great question, Dan. I think that we'll likely see some strange bedfellows, as they say, come into the industry, just because when you're, say, like an industrial manufacturer and you need to find a certain product that's going to be able to bump your growth by, you know, 300 to 500 basis points annually, the cannabis market is a great place to look for integrating picks and shovels, just as an example. Mm-hmm. And you could certainly do the same as if you're, you know, a big packaging company that wants to accelerate one of your businesses for consumables. You'd look at the cannabis industry as a place to grow your revenue. So it's highly likely that we see that, especially with the opportunity of interstate commerce. But it's you know, just as we mentioned the last time we spoke, it's hard to forecast what exactly comes from these policy changes. Although I think that's a great point that even as of this morning, we saw a pharmaceutical company purchase a cannabis-focused pharmaceutical company. So that was probably a more likely acquisition or partnership. Mm-hmm. But we could definitely see the cosmetic space in the same way that we saw it with CBD when the Farm Bill was passed.
So when you look at what's going on here, and we talk about the big companies possibly coming in, and capital being more available, if you look at the illicit market, which now you said is about $50 billion, some people think it is size 75. This really could be a dramatic shot in the arm for lots of different businesses, because once you cross the border and you of legal versus illegal, and you start generating more revenue towards the legal side of the business, a lot of people are going to want to play. And I look at it from the standpoint and say, well, wait a minute. If we have the ability to ship this product in the United States, could we wind up also be shipping product around the world? Especially with the UN decision to decriminalize cannabis in, like, you know, over 100 nations. If we decriminalize it and leave it and let it alone, do we also create a huge international market for this product, which changes the growth dynamics considerably?
I mean, I think I'll start here and let Mike finish, but this is one of my favorite parts about when you're talking about the addressable market for cannabis. People talk about that $50 billion to $75 billion as the illicit market, but it generally is in regards to the domestic market, right? When we look outside of the United States, and in all likelihood, the U.S. legalizing and showing the fundamentals behind what can be brought in from a tax revenue standpoint, all the way to other companies being able to increase their market cap, there's a huge chance, there's a very significant chance that we see other established first world countries follow. And that turns that addressable market from that illicit size that people commonly cite of that 50 to 70 billion into a multiple of itself as we move across mm-hmm. the rest of the world.
I happened to interview somebody. Go ahead, please.
And just one other point to make is that, from my understanding of basically international trade and international law, there are a ton of treaties that the U.S. has with lots of other countries where, you know, if a law changes in the U.S. or, you know, in terms of the scheduling or the descheduling of different, you know, different drugs, they sort of filter through all these treaties that most people don't even know about, such that it influences the laws in other countries where, you know, a country might want to legalize, but they can't because they have this treaty that's actually tied to things far larger than cannabis. But the second the U.S. deschedules it, then it just flows through that treaty as well. I've also heard that aspect, that it's, you know, the international market will get a sort of a shot from whatever the U.S. does just through the treaties that we already have existing that have nothing to do with cannabis, but
right.
It tags along.
There was an article that I read recently that talked about when the United Nations decriminalized cannabis, they expected a boom in Europe of people getting into the business. But it wasn't getting into the business to sell recreational cannabis in Europe. It was getting into the business to be prepared to be able to export product to the United States, because while there may be more people in Europe, there's the American market is the biggest, fastest growing in the world, and they want to be there. So that you're going to have foreign organizations, companies who are going to want to come in and play in this market. Some people are saying, gentlemen, that the cannabis business is perhaps the biggest growth story probably for the next 20 to 30 years.
Well, that's basically our view of it, is that, you know, to me, if I go back to the internet, it feels like internet in sort of the late 90s, you know, depending on where you're picking, but there's this multi-decade secular growth story driven by, you know, incremental easing of the illegality and regulations and improving legality. Of basically a product that's been, you know, to have proven demand, that's been, you know, artificially prohibited, you know, for decades now, that once you, you know, legalize it and open it up to product innovations and, you know, more social acceptance and, you know, just effectively unleash a lot of latent demand, you'll first capture the illicit market and then expand into non-users who would never touch something illegal but will touch something if it is legal. And then if the product consumption is also innovated against versus just, you know, smoking raw flower or some extracts.
Mm-hmm.
And well, that might be even the gentlemen, best part about the growth.
Go ahead, finish.
Okay.
We got 30
seconds.
Maybe
that might be the best part about the growth story, is that when people talk about the internet or even the you know, the emergence of Bitcoin, which has been a more common current topic, you look at both of those trends and there wasn't a market that was already existing for them as they developed. So there are a bunch of people trying to put numbers out for what they thought could be generated from this new industry. But with cannabis, we have the illicit market to work off of. And there's plenty of upside beyond that from common people that will be more comfortable going to stores. But it's easy to forget that we have these dollars that are already exchanging hands across the world that we're just going to work into a taxable official structure in cannabis.
Well, as I said, we're out of time. Thank you for stimulating our gray matter about the possibilities of this exciting business. If you missed any of this industry update, you need to go back and listen to it. Go to W420RadioNetwork.com, go to the archive section, and look for Mike and Colin, and listen to this show and their previous show. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us today. It was a pleasure having you on, and it was very informative.
Thank you for taking part in America's Cannabis Conversation. To hear this show in its entirety, or to hear any of our archive shows, log on to americascannabisconversation.com and tune in for the next installment of America's Cannabis Conversation. W420RadioNetwork.com.